This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Last week I was talking to Rosalie Hunter and Diane McConnell about their early days in the Manawatu and how they used to go to country dances and more formal dances in town.
You could go to dances every week.
Yes.
You know, whereas now if we're looking to go to a dance, you sort of troll through the places trying to just even find a dance. But our country dances were, when you said the babies in the supper room, and whoever was doing supper was just keeping an eye on the babies, so mum was able to go out and dance, and then she'd be called in to feed the babies.
Yes, it was.
And also I know, I can't remember, but I know as babies we were also shared bassinets, so someone would bring in the bassinet with their baby, and then the next baby could just be popped in the bassinet with that baby.
Yes.
But the suppers...
Oh, no, that's what I've written in there. When we had the dances, the suppers were marvellous.
Now, that's one thing you country wives were outstanding at, was cooking, and cooking for a crowd and cooking for a lot of people.
Well, with the Brunswick ones, you always knew that Mrs. Thompson would bring ginger kisses.
Oh, okay.
With cream in them.
Oh,
they were just delightful, and you'd almost line up there and the ginger kisses would be gone, you know.
Did you ever get the job going round the hall? I was one of the ones who was, you know, you've got a plate in this hand and a plate in this hand and you're going around offering it to the older people. And there was
I can't remember doing
that. Oh, we used to take them round and
we had to put up the big trestles in the middle of the hall.
And people help themselves.
People help themselves.
That happened at the bigger ones, but our little local country ones was this. And I was once there, and I can still remember my mother made fabulous sponges.
Yes.
She'd put the Kenwood mixer on with the eggs and then go out and do something and come back much later. Beautiful sponges. So it's here with all the cream. Can't remember what was in this hand, but I know it was equally as...
Pikelets.
Could have been anything.
Yes.
Pikelets, asparagus,
shortbread.
Shortbread was good. Oh, brandy snaps.
Yes.
Oh, they were great. But anyway, so I've got a plate of both, nicely dressed, being a perfect little hostess, walking around offering food.
How old were you?
I would have been about 10.
Yeah.
Yes. And suddenly I was aware a hoo-hoo beetle had landed on me, and the option was splat with the sponge, throw those. And I can remember still being so proud of myself, saying to whoever was near, would you mind taking that beetle off me, please? As if crawling up to meet me. But no, the food that...
And it was all homemade?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes, you didn't have bought things.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Buying food back then, you sort of... I think back to the local shop where we... You know, and there'd be that hard cheese or Chesdale processed cheese. But all your own eggs, your own cream, your own meat, your own beautiful food.
No, we did. And can't remember my mother ever buying anything to take out to something. I can remember her making flaky pastry, and Dad had killed the pig and we rendered down the fat that was in the pig. It was sort of around the stomach. And then you had this lovely lard, and she'd roll out the flour and the water until it was consistent, and she'd spread all the fat over it, and then she'd fold it up in three and roll it out, and then she'd spread again. And you got this lovely flaky pastry. You could never buy flaky pastry like that.
And people were famous for their particular things.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know, what was yours? What were you...
Ginger kisses was Mrs. Thompson always made ginger kisses with cream in them. Oh, they were lovely.
No, the country dancers. They went, it was when 6 o'clock closing came in. And suddenly the people were going, not 6 o'clock, when 6 o'clock closing went out and 10 o'clock closing came in. And so people were staying at the pubs longer.
Mm.
And then you were sort of getting them coming after the pub, coming out to the country dances, and often they'd had too much to drink. And
yes, I don't remember that.
And then it turned into the cabarets.
Oh, I see.
And then it was there, lots of people around, big halls, and the little country dances had pretty much gone at that stage.
That's right, people have been more mobile lately, more cars. And
yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Yes. A lot of the teachers' college went to the ballroom Astoria. And when Brian had gone to Mangamahu to do shepherding and I went back to Whanganui to Westmere School to do my probation year, and we thought one weekend we'd come down to the ballroom Astoria again, it was never the same. All our group had vanished. So it was the social group you made there. Well, Brian did every dance, but if a rock and roll came on, he never got up. And I said, was it because he couldn't throw me over his shoulder? But but he didn't like rock and roll.
Yeah, I came too late for that. So we did, you just need one step of sort of jigging up and down, and it could last you for 10 years. But you didn't get the coordinated dancing, which is a shame, really. I think the structured dancing has something a bit better to it.
Well, Strip the Willow was one we played, and you had your two lines of dancers, but you were in groups of four, and you sort of danced with round in the circle, and then you danced with everybody till you got to the other end. But it always ended up in a mess, and I don't really understand why, but it just got faster and faster and louder till you'd see women shoot across the floor. But it was a fun dance.
I think one of the real beauties of those dances, the country dances, was that everybody danced with everybody.
Yes, that's right. You're
young,
gay Gordons.
Old, and you were changing partners.
Yes.
And so you got to talk to a whole lot of different people. Whereas now, as you say, you could have one step, one partner.
Yes.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So I think they were great for a community.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
Very much so. I was nearly 6 foot tall when I left primary school, and all the boys I danced with were about down here somewhere. So I was very happy to meet a 6 foot four partner to dance with.
And the other aspect of that then, would you be sitting down when the boys come up to ask you to dance and then you stand up and they suddenly realise
there's more to you than I thought? Yes, that would be right. Because the country dancers, they all sort of went men to the back door probably, and some of them would disappear and not come back, and the women would go and sit down.
Yeah.
But we were always taught if you were asked to dance by anybody, you always got up with that person. And, you know, there might be somebody you didn't particularly want to dance with, but you always said
yes. But you didn't want to. I think there were different conventions, because I have heard some. There was a story that the guy said, yes, you walk right across the floor, and everyone's watching you walk across the floor, and she says no, and you walk all the way back, and everyone's seeing you. But was it at the time when you had the books to write down?
No, we didn't have that. No, I think that had been earlier.
But I think also there were particular people who liked to dance with particular people for certain dances.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, for instance, the Highland Schottische or something like that would come on.
Yes.
And they'd start playing, and you would immediately look for that person. Because you knew they were fun to do it with.
Yes.
And then, of course, there were what we used to call the petticoat rippers. When dresses, remember in the 60s, the skirts and that had been full.
Yes.
Big steps, no problem. And then we went for straighter. And some of the guys with their great big long legs took lovely big long strides. So you'd stand up and you've got your new dress and your new petticoat and just you're looking lovely. And you take that first step backwards and petticoat's gone. And big, tall, long legs.
My mum made my petticoats and they were three layers to them. The top one was gathered in for the waist and then made of cotton, and the next ones were made, and I can't think what we called it, but it was a lot of like a gauze which you stiffened.
Yes.
And you dipped it in starch and ironed it, and it made it stand out beautifully. But it ripped your stockings.
Is it a muslin sort of thing?
No, it was heavier than muslin. Heavy, it was heavier than a gauze even, again. It was,
That's another thing, the dresses.
Yes,
your mother was a she made your dresses, and then you learnt to sew.
Yes.
Same here. Mum could whip up beautiful dresses.
My mother was a dressmaker before she was married, so I was very fortunate like that.
And then you would have done a lot of sewing.
Yes.
Over the years.
Mm.
Yeah.
You didn't buy anything. You did your sewing and your knitting. And when I went to Utawai, I learnt to spin. And so I could spin jerseys, you know, the wool for jerseys for the children.
Oh, and you dyed it as well?
I did go to a dyeing school at Massey, but I didn't have access to the... We went to natural dyes where you used berries and bark
onion skins
and those sort of things. But I didn't pursue that for very long. I rather knit the natural coloured dark brown or whatever wool I had from the sheep, really.
Mm. Were you using your own wool from the Romneys?
Yes. And it was fairly, that was fairly harsh wool, but you learnt to know people who had fleeces for sale that was better quality than the Romney finer.
And what were the better quality? What were the ones you liked?
I think the more merino, merino cross you would get, because you don't get a black merino, but if you put a merino, you had a merino ewe, and put a black ram to her, you would get a lovely wool from it. Nice long staple, lovely crimp in it.
Oh, nice.
And it was lovely to knit with.
You're talking a busy life, aren't you? You know, when you talk, you would have had gardens.
Yes.
You're sewing, you're cooking, you're not a lot of time for reading.
No, but I still did. No, you were very. It was a very busy life, really. I can remember when we went to the Totras, and this is newly married, and Brian said, oh, we're having the shearers come in November, and you'll need to have morning tea for 12, you'll need to have lunch for 7, afternoon tea for 12, and then you feed your family at the end of the day. And I thought, oh, I can never manage that many. When we did it at home, your morning, well, we had early starts at home at 5 o'clock. So you had a cup of tea and a sandwich with Dad, went to the shed, came in for breakfast at 7 o'clock. But we only started at 8 o'clock when we were shearing at the Utawai. But it was still a big number of men to feed. And then all of a sudden it changed. The shearers all bought their own food and things. I don't know what made it change, but I had about 5 years feeding the shearers and the shed hands and the people we employed as well.
Was it linked to the pay, do you think?
I don't know. I think that it started with the big stations. The shearing groups went as a whole group. They stayed on the farm like they did. That started down Southland, I think, where they had the bigger stations. And they had the shearing quarters and they slept at the shearers' quarters. But all of a sudden, it just changed for the shearers. I didn't have to feed them except the boys. It was David Sinclair, and we had a single boy and one up at Waituna West. And I just had to have them extra for meals in the morning and afternoon tea.
So what, the shearers would make their own meals, or they'd buy them from a shop in town or something? Or?
Well, to start off with, the shearing gang we had at the Totras was a Maori gang.
Yeah.
And they bought a gas unit, which they put up in the engine room. And they had these big billies of the most uninviting food.
It wasn't lamb, was it?
It was.
A big boiler.
Yeah. It had, some days it had sausages in it, and some days it had saveloys in it, and anything that could go in it, and rarity. And they'd boil this up, and there'd be this fluffy grey, boily stuff on top, and they loved it. But it wasn't my taste. I'm sure it was very tasty to them.
Yeah.
But the boys still came in and had lunch and things with us.
And so you were able to feed them in the house rather than take the food to the shearing shed.
Yeah, the homestead was there and you just went a little way out and the wool shed was there, quite close. Mm.
What about with the haymaking, feeding haymakers?
No, I didn't have that so much. Our haymaking contractor bought his own.
Oh, right.
No, I didn't have that so much. But at home, Mum fed the haymakers.
Yes.
And I had to walk out with the billies of oat water and usually sandwiches for morning tea, but sometimes scones.
Yeah.
And then they would come home and have lunch. That was, you know, in the late 40s, really.
Mm. Yes.
And they'd have great big meals, presumably.
Yes, they did, because I remember one time Mum ran out of lettuces and she said cold meat and lettuce and, you know, veggies and things for them for lunch and pudding they always had.
Mm.
And she ran out of lettuces and she said, I don't know what I'm going to do. And my auntie said, who'd come to see us, have you got a cabbage?
Mm-hmm.
Go out and get a cabbage. She made coleslaw, and that was the first time we had coleslaw. I can remember her saying, and you just do this, and you grate carrot into it, and a little bit of onion if you like it, and you've got your coleslaw. Yeah. I'd never had coleslaw. Yeah.
Now, that's the thought, because the sort of diet was relatively limited at early on, wasn't it? The main thing's the meat, and then you boil a load of vegetables up. And that's what you. So on the farm, you'd be having some meat from the farm, and that'd be the
mutton.
Yeah.
I can't remember having beef until I was sort of 8 or 9, and I can't remember having sausages till I was about that age.
Yeah. And chicken?
Only the chicken killed on the farm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they were pretty tough.
We had rabbit more than anything.
Okay,
Mum made a lovely rabbit in her Ransware dish that she had, and she soaked it in milk overnight and then poured the milk off and put bacon over it. And rabbit was lovely.
Okay.
Mm.
Oh, so do you miss that? Because it's hard to get rabbit these days.
Yes. No, I haven't had it since we left home. No. But Dad used to go fishing quite a bit. We were only 6 miles from the beach, I suppose, and we always had a flounder net white bait in the season. And he had a friend who had a boat that they used to go out and come home with fish. It was lovely.
And then they'd be making all the sort of preserved stuff over for...
Brawn out of the pig. When
did you make
the pig? Yes.
Oh, right. Yes. My nana made brawn.
Yes. And so you saw this head floating with an eye in the, pot. Yeah. That wasn't too much fun, but Mum made lovely brawn and she set it in little pots.
I think there was also more sharing. I was thinking back to when, you know, we'd kill a pig.
Yes.
And, you know, it would go in the...
brine.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the, but it would be shared. I can remember when we got the first freezer. And so anything big that was killed, you shared it.
Yes.
With other people who you knew would enjoy it.
Yes.
And it was the same with fish. We were often out at sea.
Yes.
Come back in, plenty of fish, so you'd drop some off at someone's place on the way home. Oh, we've got you a snapper. Or...
yes.
Because you wouldn't have freezers then, would you?
No, we didn't have a freezer. We had a big, what would you have called it? It was the little...
oh, like the big safe?
Yes, the big safe that hung outside in the shelter somewhere. And we had a tank made, and the bottom of the tank was your safe. This was later on when Mum set the milk in the pans underneath, and the top was water. So it could be pumped up and pumped to the house.
Okay.
So at the bottom of the, they were made in Whanganui, those tanks. They came out to the farm and they constructed them out of the concrete. And the bottom part was always for the cold. That's where the sheep hung until they were set, as Dad called it, before they were cut up.
Okay. So, and they were quite effective at sort of
keeping things cold, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
They were. I think the water above the second level kept them very cool.
So did they have sort of any water sort of flowing down so that you got the evaporation?
No. It was built in the shade of the house.
Okay.
Well, you know, on the Yes, on the shady side of the house, quite close to the house. You could only just walk between the tank and the house.
Yeah.
But it was nice and cool in there, and you could put the milk in the pans at night, and in the morning the cream was set and you could skim that off, and we'd have cream and milk.
All right, okay.
Cream on your porridge with brown sugar.
Yes. Unheard of now.
So would you say that sort of a rural wife's lifestyle at that time was good, desirable, better than city?
I think there was far more companionship in the district when we were young.
Yeah.
Country Women's Institute had been formed in the district when that I first remember. And all the wives seemed to go to it, take the children that weren't at school.
Yeah.
And it was a very social group, and they had, you might have competitions for baking, sewing, knitting, flowers, all that sort of thing. And it was a great thing. They helped one another much more, I think, in the district then at that stage.
And there'd be more people, wouldn't there?
Yes, there was more people than what there is now. I think if you had four farms, you might only have one there now.
Yeah, yeah. And the church and the school would have been basic sense of the community?
We only had a school. We didn't have a church, but the church people came to the district hall every week to take a church service, but we didn't have like Brian and I were married in Whanganui at what we called our local church, but that was in the next district at the Westmere church, really. But no, I think there was more companionship, I think, in districts than there is.
Was there a social hierarchy? And was it very stable, the sort of same people who'd been there for a long time?
Well, at that stage it was. They were all... Dad had gone... There's been somebody else on the farm before Dad bought the farm. But I think a whole generation came in about that time, sort of pre-war.
Mm-hmm.
And there were just so many families the same as us.
Yeah. All about the same stage with
in life, children and so on. I know I can remember one lady having a baby and this baby hadn't been planned. And she used to bring a little boy down to Mum and she'd look after him for the day. And I remember Mum got a tea box. You remember the big tea boxes that stood up like this? And she used to put the little boy in the tea box while she wanted to do something outside so he wouldn't crawl into things. And so there was more companionship, I think. And after the war, the Home Guard made up teams of, I can remember them playing cricket, mowing our cow paddock so they could play cricket in it. And one district's cricket team came and played the other cricket team, and then they'd all have similar to a barbecue. I can't remember them taking sausages or anything, but they took food along to share.
Yeah, okay.
And that was great at that time.
So, and you'd find at that stage maybe each family would have one car or...
Some families didn't have a car. Right. We didn't have a car till I would have been 12.
So
Dad went to town on his bush bike.
Okay, and how far was that?
11 miles.
Okay, yeah.
And he bought a bath home on his back, on his bike, to put in the house.
A bath.
B-A-T-H.
On his back.
On his back.
They weren't little light plastic things then.
When you say about it, was it the metal tub that you use buckets to fill up?
Yes, it was a tin, but it had been painted.
Yeah.
Okay. But it had legs on it, you know, like the claw legs on it. It wasn't an enamel one like we had later on.
Yeah. It must have looked great.
But Grandma and Granddad came down from Taihape. They'd take Mum to town for the day and she'd do a big shop.
Oh, yeah.
And that would be your groceries. The milkman... Or the mailman it was, not the milkman. The mailman delivered bread, and if you had something else that you badly needed, he would pick that up and deliver it too. And he sold you chewing gum.
Okay.
which we weren't allowed.
Yeah. There was, we had the grocery shop, which was, I don't know, several miles from home, and he would do a run once a week. Oh. And Mum would phone up and, you know, go through the list. Yeah, we'll have one block of cheese and this and this and this and this.
Mm.
And then there was the butcher up the road, and he would deliver the... We didn't need milk delivered, but the mail and the newspapers, groceries, meat, all delivered.
Yes.
At the gate, which was quite different to, you know, to someone having to go off and get all their own stuff.
Yes.
They actually could stay home and have a lot of stuff coming in that was needed. Yes.
Oh, we've got that now with Timu.
Yes.
Trade me.
Uber meals.
Yeah.
Just slightly different.
When we were here in Fielding, or out at Stanway, new farmers, it was then, farmers would ring me up and get a order, and each week they would bring that order out to us and deliver it to the house. When we went to Utawai, their shop at Apiti rang us every week, and they delivered. So that was good, because we were 54 miles from town at that stage, and they would bring our groceries to us. So it was very good service from the farmers for us.
Mm. Mm. For someone who wasn't happy in the district and isolated, it must have been ghastly to have, you know, they would have been so isolated. But in my experience, districts tended to be aware of it and looked after each other.
They did.
Very aware of it.
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so. And little groups would be formed in the district. When we were at Utawai, we had an institute group, and we met in the hall to start off with, and then it got less people, and then we met in people's houses. And each month they would have something that you focused on. It might have been sharing new recipes, or looking at knitting something for welfare people, or making bibs, which I think about now, making bibs for older people who were in care, you know, and we were sort of all joking about this, making bibs for older people, and then when Brian got unwell, we were very grateful. So, no, I think there were lots of things provided in the districts when we went there. I can even remember having line dancing group come up to teach us line dancing at Utawai. That was fun.
This is part 2 of 3. Listen next week for part 3. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.